Hello everybody and welcome to this video, which is kindly sponsored by Squarespace. Today we're adding a whole new gallery page to the site. So we're going to add a new page, select pre-existing gallery because, well, then we get a gallery to play with already. Quickly rename it HMS Glory because that's the ship that we're going to be showcasing. Remove the existing stock photos, nice and quick. Upload our new photos. So this is a 160-odd image gallery from the collection of someone who was aboard HMS Glory in the post-war period, Korean War, that kind of period. And you can see it's all there. Now we can play around with the settings, make the photos a bit bigger, play around with the aspect ratio. Of course, you can open them in a new tab or click on them and that'll give you the full size photo, whatever aspect ratio was shot in. But this gives you a nice consistent way of managing things. You see there's a few other options there as well. And the gallery is already set up. Nice and easy, some quite dramatic shots as well, including some of the early Kestrel, the predecessor to the Harrier. Now we go into the archive page, add a new text line, label it HMS Glory post-war, and then hyperlink it to the page, because all the internal hyperlinks are already there, nice and easy to find. Type in, there it is. And just like that, our new page is ready to go.
So if after all these little mini tutorials I've been doing, you think you could build a website for maybe ideally naval history purposes, but you never know, you might want to do it for some other reason, then head over to squarespace.com/Drakenafel. You can get a free trial, and once you're ready, that little link will give you 10% off your first website or domain. So thanks once again to Squarespace for sponsoring the video, and on with the main show.
Well, hello everyone. You've seen U-505, which was in Chicago. You've seen USS Silversides, which was a little bit closer to where we are today. But one of the things you haven't seen from my northern US tours thus far was LST-393. That is a preserved landing ship tank sitting up there in Muskegon. And, well, today is your lucky day if you like LSTs. We're going to take a brief tour around some of the key features of LST-393, which of course can be visited as a museum ship all the way up there in the northern part of the US. Although, of course, check out the museum ship's website, because as with quite a lot of northern US museum ships that aren't indoors, they do have limited opening months because, of course, in wintertime, the weather is a little bit too harsh for easy or regular opening hours. So with that said, let's go aboard, or almost.
Hello, welcome aboard LST-393. And yes, I've used the widest angle lens I possibly have, and you can still see I haven't managed to necessarily all of the ship in. It's a big, big ship. I mean, you know, we see landings in films, whether they be historic films or Hollywood films, and you're usually used to the LCAs, the landing craft assaults, which will have, you know, 20, 30, 40 men in them. And then you see this thing. You know, this is not a landing craft. This is a landing ship. LST, obviously, meaning landing ship tank. This is where the tanks would come down. It is a monstrous old thing. I can't imagine what it would have been like to see a couple of dozen of these things rolling in onto the beach you were trying to defend. It is basically a mobile grey office block with lots of angry tanks inside of it. But, well, I'm at the top of the down ramp. We've got the doors on either side, and we're going to go inside and see what they have aboard LST-393. Right, we've just come inside where you saw me standing. So we're now on the tank deck. This is the large open space where tanks would be stored. Also a little bit of a nightmare if you were ever going to be hit in one of these things, because of course most ships like to be divided into multiple compartmentalized bulkhead segments so that if flooding starts, it can be isolated. Unfortunately, with an LST, that's not really an option. You need a nice long space to hold as many tanks as you possibly can. This runs pretty much the full length of the ship, which means you, well, you want to keep your LST from being shot at by anything, enemy aircraft, enemy ships, enemy shore fortifications. But broadly speaking, by the time you're bringing a ship like this in to an assault, you should have already done that. If there's major heavy enemy ordnance coming after one of these ships, you've done something horribly, horribly wrong. But once the ships do get ashore, obviously, you have quite a number of Shermans coming in, and they can carry smaller ships as well. Smaller ships? Smaller vehicles. This, like for example, a Jeep with a 50 cal stuck on it, for all your high-speed, angry reconnaissance needs. But that means that this ship does have a major advantage over other museum ships. Now it's come time to preserve it, which is, of course, they have a huge amount of open space which they can devote to exhibits, as opposed to a lot of other museum ships which have to try and make do with all those small compartments we mentioned earlier. So let's carry on and see what else we can find aboard the vessel. So we're down here in the engine room, and the ship has two of these diesel engines. This one's got the cover removed, so hopefully at some point I'll be sticking a picture somewhere up in here which will show you the interior of this. And this is at the lowest level of the ship. So even though it's a landing craft, there are multiple decks. There's three full decks, and as well as the superstructure, and then a partial deck which is appended to either side of the main tank deck. That's where berthing and so forth is, which we'll see in a little bit. But down here, apart from the rudder, which is obviously slightly further aft, and a small area of void space further forward, this is the only area that you could actually access on the lower deck, because everything else is mostly fuel storage and occasionally a bit of water storage as well. And of course, these two engines are what drive the ship through the water. Being that they're diesels, they're much easier to run forward, reverse, switch on, switch off, etc., etc., when you're coming into the beach, as compared to steam turbines, which will have residual pressure for quite a while after you've come to a full, complete, and rather sudden stop once you come ashore. So let's take a little bit of a closer look around the engine room. Here, wood of the main engine room. This is still part of the machinery spaces, but we have some auxiliary power units. So this is what actually provides the ship with electricity. The diesels back there, which are geared onto the propellers, they are purely for getting the ship to and fro. But all the electricity needs of the ship, so you've got to light the ship, you've got to provide power to some of the anti-aircraft guns, obviously the radio, communications gear, etc., and also power to the motors that are going to open and close those massive doors at the front and raise and lower the ramp. All of that has to come from these units. So there's three of these units back here, and what we've got is right-hand unit. Actually, no, think about it. We're facing the stern. So this is the port side unit, central unit, starboard unit, and then the switchboard, which is just off out of picture here, which controls the distribution of all the electricity. I'm very happy to report, absolutely covered in wonderful high-grade knife switches. So this is the other portion of the ship below the main tank deck that you can access. So this is aft steering. I'm standing just behind the camera in the food store area. And this area you would normally not be in, but if the ship is hit up top and main steering is disabled, you can actually come down here and control the vessel. And if it's absolutely worst comes to worst, you can see the big crank in front of us with the cabling which runs to either side of it. And the cabling runs all the way back down over there to the stern post. So you can actually manually steer this vessel, although I rather suspect, given the amount of inertia that's going to be involved, the amount of force you're going to have to put into it, you're going to need more than a couple of men on that crank, and you're going to be needing to do a lot of cranking to get the rudder to go over all that much. And as you can see from the curvature of the hull there right at the back, this is right at the aft end of the ship, right next to the stern post. It is underwater and obviously at the other end of the vessel from the end that would probably be getting shot at, so it's relatively protected here, but that is only a relative term because, of course, the hull doesn't carry anything more than splinter-proof plating, and a near miss would still cause leaks and so forth. But you're less likely to be hit by shrapnel and so forth that you'd be getting from bursts on deck or bursts in the water nearby. Still, if you have to start hand cranking, something's still gone horribly wrong, so hopefully you never had to. So we're now one level higher in the ship. We are above the main tank deck, and this is at the aft end. Again, you can see the viewports either side. You can see it out the back. This is the ship's galley. The oven there and the heating elements, they all run on diesel fuel, so it's all one common power source. And this relatively small facility for a ship of this size would feed the crew normally, but if they're transporting a bunch of vehicles, those vehicles come with their own crews, so the staff here have to be able to supply and feed everyone who happens to be on the ship, which compared to its regular crew complement would increase quite a bit when you've got more than a couple of dozen Shermans aboard, plus maybe some trucks stuck on the upper deck, and as time went on, more and more anti-aircraft guns fitted as well, which come with their own crews. So, a pretty busy hive of activity back here in the crew quarters area. And now we've come to the highest enclosed point on the ship. This is the bridge, as you might have guessed. However, there are a few changes here that are a little bit different from when the ship was in service. So you can see all the way over there, little porthole. Now, back when the ship was in service as a Navy vessel, you would have just had rows of that type of porthole all the way around. The reason the ship has survived as long as she has is that back when she was a surplus vessel listed for disposal, she was bought and converted partially to a car ferry up here on the Great Lakes. The tank deck was divided into two sections, extra doors were put in the side, but her overall structure wasn't actually that heavily changed. There was a lot of internal changes, but those could be taken out. But one of the changes was that, well, you don't generally come under enemy fire once you're out on the Great Lakes, and the navigation authorities take a rather dim view of a vessel that's piloted from somewhere like this, where you are only looking out of small portholes. So they had to put in these big windows, which do give a pretty nice view of everything. As you can see, we've got our standard telegraphs down to the engine room to tell them how fast we want to go. We've got our magnetic compass here with a non-magnetic copper and brass outer with the ferrous balls on either side, which allow it to correct for the fact it's on a big steel vessel. There's a gyro compass down on the way to the engine room, and that comes out through here, so you can double check everything. You've got your steering position with a little dial showing the rudder position as well, and that's really all you need to run a ship like this. There are, of course, various alerts, bells and literally bells and whistles, radio receivers, and switches around. But for a ship that's pretty substantial, to be fair, this ship is bigger than almost any age of sail ship of the line for length. Its command and control facilities are relatively austere compared to what you might expect to find on something like a destroyer, even though there are a fair number of destroyers in the Second World War that are smaller than this LST. So we're now out on the main deck, and this does actually give you a continuous run all the way to the bow, although you do have to go around the sides of the superstructure here. And what's left of the ship's equipment from its World War II days include things like this. So this is all part of a massive winch set. And the idea of this is that, well, this is a fairly substantial vessel. If you run it ashore and the tide's gone out a little bit compared to where the tide was when you went ashore in the first place, you're probably stuck fast. You're not going to really be able to reverse off just using your propellers. So what you would do is this winch would have obviously chains attached to it and cables, and all of that would run out the back there. That would then be taken further back, and then you could haul the LST backwards using the winch and maybe the engines as well if the water was deep enough at that point, and you'd pull yourself physically off of the beach. Now, what you would also have found down here back in the World War II era would have been anti-aircraft guns, and there are little circular indents in various portions of the deck, which show you where various mountings were installed. There's slightly larger circular indents and weld points where you would have had twin and quadruple 20mm and 40mm guns, and there's little circular ones about the size of a large dinner plate with little cruciforms on them. They look almost like targeting reticles, and that's where you would have had a single 20mm Oerlikon. There is a surviving installation further up here on top of this superstructure. But we're going to work our way forwards whilst we're out here. So over here, you'll see the second largest of the ship's anti-aircraft installations. This is a twin 40mm Bofors, something you'll have seen relatively frequently on the channel in single, twin, or quadruple form. You've got your pedals, hand crank, unfortunately. Well, you can still spin it, but it's not going anywhere. I think that's just freewheeling. Over at the back, on top of the winch house structure, there's the mounting point for what would have been the ship's largest gun, a 3-inch 50 anti-aircraft gun. But also just to my left, so slightly forward of the ship, you've got the davits for smaller landing craft, LCVPs. So although this in and of itself is a beach landing assault craft, it has its own smaller assault craft, which it can use to attack enemy positions or in more peaceful times, just use for getting about. So we're on the forward part of the forward superstructure here, and amongst the other things that you can see, we've got the bridge pilot house just to our right. This is another 3-inch 50, so this is positioned on the forward port side position, and breech block loading. Of course, this would be taken as a base design and modified later on to become an auto loading 3-inch 50 in the post-war environment, but this is just a hand loaded variant. And behind us, you can see the davits I was talking about earlier, fairly substantial things. And one of the things you'll notice is that these are currently set in their store position, but the davits themselves are on these runners. So when you're ready to deploy the craft, you can actually load people on from here, but then the davits can run down to lower to have the craft positioned over the water, and then obviously lower it down into the sea that way. And so we find ourselves here on the forecastle of the ship. There were a lot of little hatches, exhausts and air intakes and everything all on this open part of the main deck, which are now gone, again, victims of her conversion into a ferry. But even back in those days in World War II, this is where the lighter wheeled vehicles quite often were stored, because they could be craned over the side. They could survive going down lighter ramps, or rather the lighter ramps could survive them going down compared to the big heavy armored vehicles. And you get an impression of actually just how big this ship is once more from here. Now, from where you can see that rope barrier, the bow actually slopes up quite significantly. This obviously gives the ship better seakeeping when she's maneuvering through the deep ocean waters, which a ship of this size was capable of doing. But it also raises the bow high enough to have those big clamshell doors and the big ramp down, which you need to allow vehicles with a fairly high ground clearance, well, just very tall vehicles generally, like tanks, to actually get down. There's also some rather large circular weld points, which I don't know if the camera can pick up, but these were more anti-aircraft gun installations up here up front, because by the time these ships were being built, unlike older pre-war ships that had been refitted with anti-aircraft firepower, these ships were being built at a time when they were very conscious of exactly how much of an air threat there was. And so even though it's just a landing ship, you say just, these ships actually came out with significantly more anti-aircraft firepower than some destroyers of World War II ever actually carried. So this area that looks like a slightly overgrown corridor is in fact that partial deck that I was talking about earlier. So this runs in four sections. So we've got the main tank deck, which is kind of double height, just to my right, your left. And on the upper level of that, on either side, you have basically a small metal box that runs the length of the ship on either side. This is the starboard aft section, and this is where you would have berthing and messing for the crew. Not the crew of the ship, but the crew of the tanks and the vehicles that were aboard. So on the port side in this area, there's a bunch of bunks set out. On this side, they have a bunch of different uniforms of people that you might have found aboard the ship all set out. And roughly amidships, you go down that as backup and it continues. So there's aft starboard, aft port, forward starboard, forward port. And that's where the majority of people who were not permanent members of the crew would be found. The permanent crew, of course, would be accommodated aft where the galley is and around where the superstructure is. Captain has a little cabin on the very highest point of the ship above the bridge, if you really like to be exposed. I suspect, you know, as we're on the starboard side, you can feel the heat on this side from the sun, whereas the port side is a lot cooler. And if you're in that little sheet metal cabin up top as the captain, you're either going to be very, very cold, very, very hot, and very occasionally you might get the temperature just right. So let's head back on down to the main tank deck.
And that's our very abbreviated tour of the main ship elements of LST-393. What you can see here going past you at the moment is a much, much speeded up quick look around the interior of LST-393, because you remember I said that one of the advantages it has over a regular museum ship is it's just got this big empty void space inside, which is normally in wartime used for transporting vehicles. But of course, as you can see here from this speed run, they've turned it into quite the exhibit space, covering the histories, uniforms, equipment, etc. of the various units that were aboard. There's a cutaway of a Sherman there, as well as some more general history about LSTs as a whole, as a class. And they've also tracked down a fair number of the service records of people who were actually aboard the LST, which you can see here on the port
aft quarter. They were just preparing for a dinner when we were aboard. So if you want to hold events aboard LSD 393 and you happen to be in roughly that part of the US, then you can go there and hire them out. And in particular, of course, the museum looks at LSD 393's roles in both the landings in Italy and the landings in Normandy, which are the two major areas of operation that LSD 393 actually took part in during World War II before heading back to the US and then heading to the Pacific just before World War II ended. So many thanks to the staff and crew aboard LSD 393 for letting me record this, and for those of you who helped facilitate this visit, and I'll see you again in another video.